Hello and welcome to a Brave Space podcast with Dr. Catherine Meeks. I'm your host, Chelsea Glasgow. A Brave Space podcast supports the work of the Absalom Jones Center in its mission of creating brave space where the truth can be told. Welcome, Dr. Meeks.
It's good to be with you. I always love this time.
Excellent. Me as well. Me too. Today we have a very special topic. Our last podcast, we examined what lament is, why we need to, as a community, lament, and what the Center for Racial Healing is doing about it. Today we're going to be discussing and redefining what and who is essential. I think this current pandemic of COVID-19 has really caused us to interrogate who is essential. What about you, Dr. Meeks?
Absolutely. And it's, again, we keep thinking about what are the things that are happening right now that we have to lament about. And one of the big things we have to lament about is the ways in which we try to relegate some people to being expendable and people being more important than other people. And we've done that, of course, around all of the systemic structures of oppression that we have constructed. But we're just seeing it stand up and wave flags in front of our faces right now in ways that are just kind of, in some ways, mind-boggling. When you look at how we are reopening things and which groups of workers are being ordered to come back to work. It's, you know, people working in bowling alleys and nail salons and hair salons and barbershops and massage parlors and tattoo salons. Those are the ones the governor listed first to come back to work, which is very curious when you stop to think about it. How did these people become essential in the first place? And then you look at the folks in the chicken plants and you look at the people that are working in jobs such as janitors and garbage workers and the hospital workers, the nursing assistants that we never have heard anything about. We've heard about doctors and nurses throughout this whole pandemic. Nobody talks about nursing assistants. And nursing assistants maybe in some ways spend more time with patients than actual nurses and doctors. When you get right down to it, the housekeeping people, the janitorial staff in the hospital. And then you get to these folks that are delivering everything to us so that, you know, I can stay in my house and be safe because I can put in my grocery order and some young Black or brown person shows up at my door 2 hours later with my grocery. So they have walked around in the store and put themselves at risk to bring me food so I can stay in my house and be safe. But we don't, they had to go on strike last week just to get gloves and protective gear. And they're working for people like Amazon and Kroger. So, you know, that goes to show how essential we really think they are. They are essential to keep the business going, but basically we also think that they are expendable. And it's kind of like, you know, in the mining world, where they put the canary in the mine, when the bad gases start coming out, the canary will die. And so when the canary dies, then the mine workers know they need to get out of the mine because there's gas being distributed that they can't actually smell. We're using these folks, the farm workers, all these folks that I've been talking about, we're using them much like a canary in the mine. If we can send you out here and see how many of you survive and however many of you we lose, well, that's just the price we have to pay. And you know, Chelsea, it's very distressing to think about. I mean, it makes you wish that you didn't have the capacity sometimes to see what you can see. Because it's so maddening to think that if we're going to ask these people to do this work, we should be paying them double pay, and we should have given them everything they needed to protect themselves. I mean, Amazon has made like 5 times its yearly profit just in this little time of this virus because so many of us have gone to ordering things. Well, you could spend a little bit of your extra profit to take care of the folks that are making you rich. And yet that's not the attitude at all. It's just, you know, we're going to make the poultry workers go to work whether they are sick. That's already one of the worst industries you can imagine in terms of health and all of that. And you have people in this case, 90% of the folks in Georgia anyway, are brown people who are doing that work. And so we just keep on. We call them essential now because it suits us. It fits us. They're essential to help us keep on living like we want to live. But we really don't care about them because they are absolutely expendable to us in terms of human beings. And I find that to be something to just scream about and, you know, not to even be civil about. I want to be not civil about this. It's too important.
Yeah, I feel that 1,000%. And one of the reasons being is because what you just said hits so close to home. My mother is a certified nursing assistant, so she is considered essential. But one of the things that I always say is you can determine how much someone values you by the way that they treat you. And one of the things that she expressed to me was her concern, you know, in her household, Liz, you know, her husband and her uncle, and they have some health issues. And with that being said, that means they are more at risk, right? And she's on the front line, which means that she is at risk. And in her facility, they will give the nurses and the doctors the N94 mask. But they would not give her that same mask. So she would have to have, you know, the cotton mask or, you know, the lesser quality mask when in all actuality, she is the first responder. She is the one who takes their temperature. So at least the doctors and the nurses get the temperature first, right? They are able to prepare themselves. But she, on the other hand, is not. And you would think, again, as an essential worker, as America has now named them, you would think that they will be treated with a little bit more respect and care, not just for them, but also for their families. It is a trickling down effect. It does not just affect our essential workers that, or the people, you know, like the janitors, the delivery people, the cooks in the hospitals, the nursing homes. It doesn't just affect them, but also their families. And I don't know if we are considering the scope of what happens when we do not value one another.
You know, I don't think so. I think we have split ourselves up in so many different kinds of categories until we think we live on an island. And some folks are not present on that island in our way of thinking, it seems to me. But the truth of the matter is we're all connected, whether we like it or not. And if we have people, the folks that we've relegated to the bottom dying, their illness and the continuous spread of this virus is just going to be increased, and it impacts all of us because the virus is no respecter of persons and could care less about all of our little hierarchical structures that we think will save us, which they won't. And so I just think that it's a big misunderstanding to think that you can just relegate these people into nothingness and expect them to go off and die in your place, and you can stand over on the other side and be safe. That's really magical thinking when you get right down to it, and thinking without realizing that it's a virus and viruses go where they want to go. That's one piece of this, I think. Another important piece for me is that we need to start now thinking about how are we going to treat these folks that we have treated this badly during this pandemic? What are the structures that need to be changed? How do we need to go about reorganizing ourselves so that in if anything like this happens again, there are some safety nets for these folks so that they don't just go crashing to the ground and end up being the ones who are the biggest category of victims through it all. Because I just don't think that we can keep on acting like that these folks that, you know, pick our food and the farm workers and all of that, that we're hollering how essential they are right now, we've never thought about them as being essential. We just thought the food showed up some kind of way, and we didn't care about the working conditions of the folks who work in, because they're usually immigrants, and we don't really care about them any more than we do the old people or homeless people or people in prison. We have all these people in prison, and we haven't begun to talk about what is happening with prisoners. We know that in spaces where a whole lot of folks are living together, that the virus has been more devastating than for like individuals living in our homes and apartments. So I just think, Chelsea, when we get the truth about all of this, that it's going to be mind-boggling to us how devastating this virus has been to the folks that we have relegated to non-existence in our culture. We don't care about them. That's what it boils down to. And we need to, that's just a confession that's got to be made. And then we've got to say, do we want to keep on being that group of people that don't care about a whole bunch of folks that are God's children? Or do we want to see if we can't switch gears?
You're right. You know, biblically, there are ways to lament, right? And one of the parts of lament is taking responsibility of how we have disappointed God. You know, it's a difference between Job, right? Something that happened to him. He was a righteous man and something happened to him. And it's a difference between lamentations, right? Where Jerusalem was disobedient and then suffered the conquest of Babylon. Well, that's a different situation. That was a situation in which lament meant to take responsibility for the actions that have caused this disparity. And so, you know, I would like for the listeners even to just think, one of the things you mentioned, Dr. Meeks, was that we have to think about how we are now going to treat, how we are going to change ourselves, our mentality, shift our culture to now view people in a light where everyone is just as important as the next person. And in order to do that, we have to self-evaluate. And so I want you guys to think about, you know, when you wake up on a quote unquote normal day, right? Since everyone's so eager to get back to that normality, think about that normal day when you would wake up and you would have to go through a toll, right? And you had to pay someone for a toll. You had to go to the bank. You had to go to the grocery store. And think about all of these essential workers that you meet throughout the day. And how did you value them, if you did at all? If you even recognize that this person's work has helped me in my day, right? A lot of times we, especially as Americans, we wake up with this golden spoon in our mouths. And I think at this point in time, that spoon has been taken away. And we are now recognizing, oh, wait, we need you? Oh, wait. And, you know, so everything, I'm a believer that everything happens for a reason. So this is a good time for us to wake up and lament about those times where we discounted people or didn't appreciate others. This is a good time for that.
Absolutely. And I think that to go back to the way this conversation about who's essential and lament walk alongside of each other, is that part of lament is, as you said earlier, confessing your part, your complicity, if you feel like you've got some complicity. And we as a culture are definitely complicit in the ways in which these folks are viewed and being treated. And the fact that most of the categories that I have brought up today of workers are considered low wage workers, which means that they're people who in the first place can't afford health care. And in the second place, live lots of the time in crowded conditions. And in the third place, don't make enough money really to live their lives well. And yet we have not been too worried about that until now. And even now, we don't take a step to try to make things that much better for them. I actually heard somebody say they were really worried about the proposal to give folks $600 a week extra unemployment money because they might not come back to work. if they were getting, you know, who's not going to go back to work when unemployment, everybody with one half a brain in their head knows it's a temporary situation. So you have so little respect for folks who make low wages to think that just because they were going to get a little bit of extra money, it would mean that they would quit working and just think that they could draw unemployment for the duration. You know, that to me is very sad to be thinking that way about people who aren't making enough money to live anyway. And if they get a little chance to get ahead a little bit, well, thanks be to God, you know? So I'm sure that anybody who's getting up going to work every day is not going to think they can quit going to work because they got 4 weeks of unemployment that was a little more than they were used to having. And I think we have got to put our feet in other people's shoes more and think about that. We're not talking about a different species here. We're talking about sisters and brothers, and people are like us. People care about the same kinds of things and want the same kinds of things. And they want to be able to live their lives as fully as we want, as all of us want to live our lives. And so it's real important to not lose sight of that as we go forward. And maybe this virus, you know, Chelsea, you're right. I mean, I don't believe in accidents. I think things happen. However, for whatever reasons that they happen, which is sometimes very difficult to discern. But what is not hard to discern is that they are the circumstances there to teach you something and to give you a chance to grow, to be transformed, or to do whatever God's got in mind, because God's always working and always looking to move us closer to what God's imagination is for us in the first place. So this pandemic gives us an opportunity to allow parts of ourselves to be born that maybe we didn't even know were there as a possibility. And it certainly gives us an opportunity to interrogate the way we have been running this country and seeing people and the ways in which any of us that are complicit with that, to the extent that we want to keep things the way they were, want to go back to the good old days when, you know, poor folks just were down at the bottom doing the best they could and kept their mouth shut about it. And you call those the good old days. Well, they might have been good old days for somebody who wasn't at the bottom, but I don't think they were too good for the folks who were at the bottom. So there is no going back to the good old days. We've just got to move forward to some better days. And I think and this virus is inviting us onto that path, I think.
Mm-hmm. And it also makes us reassess, what do we qualify as the good old days anyways, right? Because if anything, this virus has only illuminated what is true, all of the racist underpinnings that were going on all along. So you know, it makes us reevaluate, what is that normal? We don't even want that. By the time we finish lamenting, we would not even want to go back to a space that allowed us to get here.
That's right. Absolutely. And one of the things I'll say as our time is winding down here is that the webinars that we talked about in the last podcast that we did will include conversations dealing with these essential people that are truly expendable to us. It's almost like a joke for us to be calling them essential when basically we're thinking they're essential because they're expendable, and they're essential to this construct of who we can, which canaries we can send out into the mines, you know? So if we can send them out and they can manage, then we know it's safe for the rest of us. Why didn't we open up the banks and the corporate offices and the, you know, why didn't the governor start tours back through the governor's mansion? Why are we doing nail salons instead of tours? You know, so you have to ask yourself and you have to think about that. And so we're going to be having folks, the voices, either of the voices from the people themselves or from people who work with them, of people who are homeless, that is living without shelter, undocumented people, farm workers, nursing assistants, hospital janitors, cooks, delivery people. We want to hear the voices of all of those people in response to how this virus has been impacting them, because we don't ever want to forget their stories. And we want to keep on holding them up as a group of people that are essential to us and not expendable by any stretch of the imagination.
I think that is a phrase that we need to keep near and dear to our hearts. And that is, people are essential, not expendable. Absolutely. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that is all the time we have for today. However, if you want to keep this conversation going, we are always here to tell the truth. And so stay connected with us on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Center for Racial Healing, or Dr. Meeks' public page on facebook.com, Dr. C. Meeks, or by searching Dr. Catherine Meeks. Make sure, again, you are following us on all of those platforms and stay connected, because we will continue this conversation. If you know of an essential worker who would like to express and tell us their story and share with us their story, please reach out to us on one of these platforms, whether it is our website or on our Facebook page or on Dr. Meeks' public page. We would love to talk to you and get your story out to the community so that we can get a more intimate experience that some of us may not have. And so thank you again so much for listening. Again, remember to always tell the truth. Until next time.